Welcome to City Limits Talk. I'm WAER News Director Chris Bolt. This is a special presentation of WAER's City Limits Project, our year-long examination of poverty in Syracuse. Today's panel discussion will focus on education and how poverty has impacted it. We have guests, experts in elementary schools, colleges, community education, teaching literacy, mental health, and all of their connection to poverty. Over the next 2 hours, we'll be examining how poverty impacts schools and their mission to help people have a better future, how poverty erects barriers, financial, logistical, even psychological, to someone's attempts to get educated or trained to have a better future, and what role do schools, colleges, the community, and adult education play in helping individuals and the community deal with Syracuse's gripping poverty problem. You can share your thoughts as the discussion goes along. Go to the City Limits WAER Facebook page, or you can weigh in on Twitter at WAER883 using the hashtag City Limits Talk. And if you'd like to see more of this special audio journalism project, go to citylimitsproject.org. There are a series of podcasts there on poverty in our community, and we're adding to that all the time, so continue to check back. Joining me today are Dr. Casey Crable, Onondaga Community College president. Prior to coming to OCC, Dr. Crable served as dean and or president of colleges in New Jersey, California, Connecticut, and Maryland, so has a wealth of experience in higher education, including the questions of accessibility and success in college. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Tolga Hayali is superintendent of Syracuse and Utica Academies of Science charter schools. He has studied in Turkey as well as at Seton Hall and SUNY Oswego and can address keeping students involved in student success given the challenges of poverty. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Eli Hernandez is principal of Delaware Primary School. He has experience heading up a school in one of the most challenging neighborhoods of Syracuse. Coming from Puerto Rico, he uses his bilingual skills in his school to help those with whom language might be a barrier and amid other challenges there. Hello.
Hi.
Diamond Thaxton is a mental health therapist addressing psychological and counseling needs in schools, especially for children dealing with trauma. Hello, Diamond.
Hello.
And Amari Euclea joins us from OCM BOCES, where she's director of adult education, and we're going to get into the role of community education as it relates to poverty in our community. Welcome.
Thank you.
And before we get started, we do want to acknowledge the tragedy that's affecting the OCC community. As you may have heard, two students and a former student killed early this morning, all young people, 18, 19, and 20 years old, I believe. Our condolences to those families and, of course, the whole OCC community. Dr. Crable, I'm sure it affects the campus, staff, and students.
Thank you, Chris. The campus is heartbroken. The loss of Bailey and Michael and Samra is felt by everyone on campus, and the campus also sends love and support to the family and friends. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. So, I mean, we did want to acknowledge that before we get started on our discussion on poverty. Where I wanted to start our discussion today was to talk about poverty's impacts on education. The city has its gripping poverty problem. We've all heard the statistics of being the 13th poorest school or having the highest concentrated poverty among blacks and Hispanics and other issues related to our economy and people just not being able to get ahead. All of you are in settings where you've dealt with this on some level. I want to ask kind of the large question. How has poverty impacted schools and the role that you're trying to do to carry out the mission you have to actually help people, you know, get ahead in their lives? Dr. Crable, you want to start?
Sure. So in thinking about this, really, Chris, I thought about the impact on the school and also the impact on students and their families. And I would say in a nutshell that poverty really, for students, causes higher education to be prolonged. Right, to take longer than it might otherwise, to be delayed, so not starting right after high school, to be disrupted by going full-time and part-time or stopping out, and to be limited to the programs that are available with full financial aid support. So I think individuals see some really specific impacts. In terms of impact on the college, we find ourselves, extending well beyond what you might think of as the college's mission to try to create opportunities on campus. We have more students that work on our campus than many other schools because we're trying to provide that economic driver for the student and keep them on campus so their education continues. But we also have things like a food pantry and a clothing drive and a business wear closet and substantial financial planning courses for students and really kind of wraparound services that nobody funds but students really need.
Yeah, and we'll get in more to this because we will talk a little bit more deeply about educational opportunities at that level for people trying to rise out of poverty. At the school level or the, you know, the K-12 level, Principal Hernandez, you know, how are you seeing poverty impacting what schools are supposed to do, you know, their basic education or their basic mission of educating people?
So I think that it's a huge impact, first of all. And it is when you look at our students and you look at, you know, children from poverty and children who are not coming from poverty, the level of education is different. Our teachers, if you look at K-12 in a poor environment, they're working much harder. There's that hidden curriculum that we have to make sure that we have. It's basically the basic needs of a child. A child's not going to be able to learn if they're focused on where am I going to sleep tonight? What am I going to eat? Who's going to be at home to take care of me? And so that's a huge impact on our educational system when we are focusing not only trying to teach you, but also trying to help you in being able to just the basics. And again, that's a fight that continues to happen. But I know we're going to get into solutions and there are ways that we can get out of it as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later as we will deconstruct kind of just what it's like in a day or a week in an elementary school or high school in the district. Dr. Hiali, you know, you're in schools and obviously curriculum has to deal with these same issues. What's sort of your experience?
So basically it's how we define poverty also. If it's poverty, just lack of money, then we will just constrict it in a certain area. But I agree with Principal Hernandez. It's way more than that. It's lack of exposure, especially in the urban environment, because it's the motivation that will keep our students up towards the college or their post education after the school, high school. Therefore, the within that limit, we can see the schools have a higher impact, especially on the when we call SES, which is socioeconomic status, on their learning than even their families. That's based on the research. So while we are expected to give more and prepare them for the 21st century, with the limited resources, obviously, you can't, there's no magic, there's no miracle. So it has a direct impact, and I agree absolutely, like Principal Hernandez was mentioning. Teachers are amazing. They go the extra mile. They have to go. The hidden curriculum is out there, but the reward is amazing as well. Mm-hmm. Seeing those children being successful, you know, in anywhere they are going, after all those hard work, it pays off.
Gotcha. So, you know, in thinking about how poverty impacts education, one of the aspects is just kids' mental status when they go to school. And Diamond Thaxton, that's something that you're familiar with. They can't just be all coming there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, mm-hmm. ready to learn every morning at 7:45 or whatever.
Right. Absolutely. I think the biggest issue when it comes to poverty and its relation to education is the mental state. Usually coming from poverty, you go through so much trauma, so many problems, so many issues, and, you know, through psychology, we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And we often think everyone wants to go to college and find your purpose and your relation to the universe. And it's like, you kind of can't just jump to self-enlightenment when I don't know what tomorrow looks like. Like mentioned, I don't know if I'm going to have to move, or I don't understand what my future is. And as some of the other professionals here were talking about, it's just challenging. And trying to address those challenges in relation to people who don't need to address any of those challenges, you're kind of already trying to compete in your way, way way behind in the competition.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And then, Mari, I know at BOCES, needless to say, you're filling in a lot of different types of education, adult education, when maybe somebody didn't find their thing that they wanted to do in college, or basic literacy training or whatever. Without getting into exactly those things, because we'll go more deeply into what those are later, but how are you seeing Syracuse as having a higher level of poverty impacting your ability to have some successes in those areas or just carry out those missions?
Very similar to what Casey said. We see the students coming to us with a lot of needs that have not been met. We have students that seek the financial aid because that's the only way that they can move up in the ladder. They need the food. They need connections to mental health. So we have to find those things to fill. We have to help them with transportation and childcare because they stop in and they stop out. Life is happening all the time. And so unless we can find the way to support them, they can't be successful. And so that is the influence that poverty has on our students.
You know, another question that sort of arises to me is, in each one of your cases, the notion is that they're educational institutions. So the simple task is one thing. It's, you know, solving fourth grade, or it's getting a two-year degree, or a certificate, or it's learning a task at BOCES. Has the role kind of changed? I mean, are educational institutions still our way to get ahead, or is that blurred a little bit because it's just not so simple? It's just not a through line, A to B, to see a better future.
So at OCC, we've had some conversations over the last couple of years. You know, community colleges were created initially to provide access for people for whom higher education had been a land that they didn't travel. It was too expensive, or they weren't prepared, or they weren't sure what they wanted to do. And so the focus in the beginning was opening the door. So as an open door institution, letting people in, and that was seen as the opportunity. And I think what has happened over the past, well, I won't say how long I've been doing this, but for a while, over the past decades, is that the opportunity isn't getting in. The opportunity is getting through so that you complete something that substantially changes what's possible for your families. And so our work has absolutely changed in looking at what does it take to get through, and how do you stack the services, and how do you marshal the community agencies, and how do you get these things in line so that when you have a young person of promise, or somebody middle-aged who wants to re-career, that it's not just the getting in, but that they can see from the beginning how they get through and how they move on from us.
Mm-hmm. For in a K-12, and you know, talk about personal experiences, is access to resources. You know, as Doctor's talking about here, as far as, you know, when it comes to a two-year college, it's now getting through, right? You're at that stage. For us in a K-12 is having that access, not only for that child, but also for that parent, right? When you have access, when you have resources or access to the resources, things start to change, right? When you are guided, and that's what our schools are becoming, right? Where we're working on becoming a community school where it's open at all times, where you can get your needs met. We have a school health-based center right at Delaware, and in many of our schools, so that you, whatever medical needs you have are right there. You don't have to wait out in the city and getting, you know, loaded, waiting 2-3 months just to get anything. And so that's the type of work that we continue to do. But again, it goes back to having the access. Mm-hmm. When you have the access and the support, things can change.
Yeah, so the mission is just not as simple anymore. It's not
correct.
Educating, you know, to get into middle school or to get through college or to get through the program. The mission has changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. We're going to take just a quick break here. Education is just about universally touted as the main avenue for someone to get ahead and out of a bad neighborhood, bad economic situation, or to break the cycle of poverty. Straight ahead, what if someone is trying to find that link to get more than just a part-time job to really change their circumstances? What's that road like now if you're struggling financially? This is City Limits Talk on 88.3 FM, WAER Syracuse. Thanks for listening to City Limits Talk. I'm WAER News Director Chris Bolt. We want to focus our discussion for a few moments on the education or training a person might get that could help them forge a stable future for themselves, really the real path out of poverty. But poverty lays out myriad problems for getting a college degree or a certificate in a specific field or some training that could pave the way to that stable job and stable future for a person or their family. You can join the conversation on Twitter at WAER883 and use the hashtag CityLimitsTalk if you want to join the conversation and share some thoughts. I want to look a little bit at the role of community college. The circumstance would exist in a simple way that if somebody wanted to find a path towards a certificate for a training degree or start a two-year degree that maybe goes to a four-year degree, some way that's that step up from I don't have skills to now I have some skills in a field. Certainly people do that. Dr. Casey Crable is with us from OCC. Certainly people do that, but there's a lot of things that can get in the way.
Sure, it's challenging. And, you know, most people will think, well, there's financial aid and that will help with the cost of education. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it does help with the cost of tuition. And when you think about folks in poverty, lots of times people have pull back to the family and the expectation that they will financially contribute mm-hmm. to the family. When you're going to school, you still need a place to live and things to eat and books to read and a way to get from home to school and typically from school to work. And so we see students facing challenges there. Our local public transportation system is really limited. That creates incredible problems for students. And what we experience, I think, a lot of times is a lot of energy and optimism at the beginning of the semester, mm-hmm. and then the inability for students to sustain themselves financially over the 16 weeks that it takes to complete a semester. So you see an awful lot of dropping back, dropping out, stopping out.
You mentioned financial, some structural, just family. Also, life just happens on people. I mean, as a former instructor at OCC, you always lose students. You always see students the next semester because they just had to stop because something happened.
Yeah, a dead car battery, a bad babysitter, a change in work schedule. You know, all of these things that appear individually to be a small bump in the road can throw a very precariously balanced picture completely out of whack.
And you mentioned the motivation. When you start, you know, even again in a classroom, the first couple days, people are pretty motivated. But Diamond, I don't know if you have any insight in when you're dealing with so much, how you can't psychologically, mm-hmm. Mentally mm-hmm. sustain it for 2 years
absolutely.
Or however long the program is.
Right. Absolutely. And then it compounds. You know, when people think mental health, they think, okay, anxiety or just little things. We talk about the total state of the mind and how your decisions impact the rest of your life. So as Dr. Crable was saying, sometimes students, life happens, and they have financial aid, but then they don't understand that they have student loans, that these student mm-hmm. loans compound. And then next thing you know, you're just like, forget it all. And then that significantly depresses a person because now you're just like, I try to do everything right, and it still didn't, you know, work out. So trying to re-motivate that person, that's also another challenge.
And you do see, I know, people starting and stopping a lot.
We do, and it's a steeper climb every time because students are thinking about, well, what happened last time and,
right.
you know, how am I going to do things differently? And we try to engage with mm-hmm. students in an advising way about, well, what were the issues and how can we at least plan around those issues that we know about? But it's tough. And mm-hmm. when you see a student that you know have had those challenges actually make it across the finish line, it's amazing. And you have hope again.
Mm-hmm.
But for many, many students, the notion of a two-year degree is a silly notion that, you know, 4, 5, 6 years to put those 60 credits together is not unusual.
Well, right. I mean, I guess especially even simply thinking if you have to work and have a kid and have a parent, et cetera, those are sort of the mm-hmm. obvious ones. Is there even a difference that poverty creates in what is achievement? You know, if everything goes perfectly in your life and you really don't have to worry about stuff, you can really focus on achievement. You know, whatever that is, whether that's graduating high school or getting the college degree or excelling in some area or pursuing your passion. We always hear about that. How much does the trauma of poverty or the constant reminder of how tough it is to go day to day get in the way of you even having that attitude for achievement?
So I think a couple of things, you know, if you've had an interrupted high school preparation or you enter college not ready, you've got to take some preparatory work ahead of time. That probably would have the impact of limiting sort of how far you see yourself going. We have students who may have the interest and the capacity and even the drive for a four-year education or a graduate degree or a professional life, really making decisions in the beginning because they want a job in 12 months or they put themselves on a calendar because they fear the, you know, the absence of a steady income. And you can certainly understand that. So I think there's a sense of limiting, and even financial aid presents its own limits because it defines the courses you can take. So if you are dependent on financial aid, you don't have the latitude that I had as a student to wander through the curriculum and find something interesting. You have to take the things that are on a prescribed course toward a degree, or you don't qualify for the aid. So there are both things that limit, you know, that come from inside the person and things that limit from the system.
Would you guys even see it from below that as kids are going through school and approaching that, what am I going to do with my life? You know, nowadays we know that people don't have one thing they do. You have multiple careers over your life. But that having to sort of struggle through poverty and whatever they're doing in K to 12, or I guess now we're thinking about, you know, secondary education, that it's just hard to focus on that stuff. I mean, is there sort of a deficit of hope or deficit of thinking about your future because your present just takes all your effort?
And I think that that's it right there. When you talk, it's, you know, the self-fulfilling prophecy. I've had students and I've worked in the middle school, they've said, Mr. Hernandez, this is where I'm going to be. I'm not leaving the West Side. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to end up dead. This is just the way it's going to be. When you live in poverty, that's all you're constantly thinking of. How do I make it? How do I get that meal tomorrow or tonight? I'm not thinking about tomorrow, really. I'm just thinking about today. It's called the survival piece, right? And so when you are constantly living in that state and there is no one, even though you have teachers, but it's not on a constant basis someone telling you, you can make it, you're great, I look forward to seeing you at such and such, it becomes more difficult because we're talking about children here, okay? The other piece is that I think we in society, we've made a mistake in glorifying athletes and glorifying what you can be. I have so many children that want to be basketball players. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be. They can be, but they're not going to be.
Right.
So what next? How do we teach them those steps, right? Those skills to be successful. They might be better than a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And so we glorify, right, these athletes and a whole bunch of other different folks, right? And it, again, it continues to pound on children, mm-hmm. their belief system, which is huge, which we need to attend to.
Is that worse in an impoverished family, home, neighborhood, whatever, because it's such a brass ring as opposed to more the reality because, say, somebody in Fayetteville or Liverpool or, you know, other fairly stable situation, there's reality. There's real steps. So when the real steps aren't there, is it more of a brass ring or even more, attractive but also destructive to have? You know, you're not going to be LeBron James. You're not going to be, the next rapper or the next, you know, movie star, whatever those are.
Yeah. And I agree. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that we need to focus on with kids is, again, giving them those steps, those mm-hmm. skills to say, this is where you can be before you can become this athlete, because mm-hmm. I'm not trying to discourage you. Before you can be this athlete, you need to get through this stage and that stage. And how do you do it? Giving them the steps. But it also comes back to the parents, because when you're talking about a child of poverty, you're looking at a parent who's perhaps working 3 to 4 jobs. That when this child leaves our school, they're being brother and sister, but really being mom, taking care of that other brother and sister, right? And so there's that adult education as well, where mom and dad, whether it's mom alone or just dad alone, they're working, and so they're trying to make that money just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so even within that parent, their focus might be, I want you to get an education, but for me, you know, how do I, you know, I just need you to also get that money, mm-hmm. right? Which then comes the balance of education versus money and what we need.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Galli, would you weigh in on that?
Absolutely.
I see you nodding your head.
I think also being able to see the role models. It's very important. Mentorship. We talk all the time about mentorship. And just looking as a school by itself, it would be impossible to raise this child. And mm-hmm. it needs the whole village, as it goes to saying. And we have seen a lot of impact with the community organizations like Hunter Blackman, Junior Frontiers, all those great organizations who are coming in, stepping in. They are not athletes, trust mm-hmm. me, but they are great judges, great engineers, and have great families. And they came from the same neighborhood so that they can tell them the step. I was right there where you were. I know your parents, your grandparents, and here's what I did. So it's more real, authentic for this child to see the steps, how what it can take. But no matter what, it has been seen all the time with the mentorship program, we need to hold our children's hand in the urban environment to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. Because self-efficacy, it's not just just a terminology out mm-hmm. there. It needs to be instilled in there. Mm-hmm. I have seen this many times when we kind of encouraged and pushed them a little bit to participate in a regional competition, science fair competition, mm-hmm. engineering competition, or any competition where we are the only one who looks different within that community. And that kind of was intimidation for our children. I will tell you that right up in front. And you, right at that moment, you kind of give them the encouragement. It's not about how it looks like. It's about what's in here and how you present it. And that's where the moment they have to hit that during our time in the middle school and the high school level, or also in the elementary school level, mm-hmm. so that in the future when they're ready, they can really tackle those problems way more mm-hmm. easier. So again, just adding on it, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, having the vision of being a successful something other than the athlete, entertainer, mm-hmm. that's such a far cry, is one thing, but really getting them, I mean, relate it to poverty or relate it to not having a stable home and having to deal with the trauma or the stress, whatever, probably requires more effort to keep them thinking that that's something they can do. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not just about saying here's possibilities.
No, it's not.
It's also continuing it on.
And absolutely, if we will just keep on only focusing on the trauma, we will never get out of it, mm-hmm. ever. The excuses will always be there, and those are valid excuses or strong excuses. We need to fight for it. But if he's stuck in there, we will never get out of that cycle. And we have seen this. And with the help of the whole village, like I was describing before, that's the cycle then we can break through. And the children will see, oh, I know Mike. He did it. I can do it too. I know him. So that belief, that self-efficacy will build on it more and more. And the motivation, because hope is the part, the only thing that will keep them alive. And we need to keep that, ignite that hope over and over again, that there's always hope, but it depends on the work that you will put on it. It's not going to come to you, you know.
Where does stress and trauma and motivation and hope, how do those intersect? How can one start to push out the other?
Right.
Where does that happen?
I guess the biggest word that encompasses this piece would be resiliency. And it's different in different people. Mm-hmm. Some people are stronger than others in different capacities, and that's okay. I think, as we were talking about earlier, is that everyone has these idols like LeBron or Kim Kardashian. I'm just going to go be these things. And it's kind of like you, as someone mentioned before, the self-efficacy, that takes time. Takes a lot of time and a lot of work. Some people take stress and trauma, and it becomes a motivator. Some people take stress and trauma, and it becomes a depressant. So working with that person is and finding out what exactly are the tools that they need to get where they gotta go, it's its own set of challenges.
And I don't know, Mari, on the adult education, we're going to get into this a little more later, but can you think of examples of where somebody literally just couldn't do it because they didn't have the motivation, or the opposite, or maybe both? I mean, I'm sure you've seen both.
Have seen both. One of the things we see on occasion is almost a fear of success they're getting from the outside. They're hearing all this, all these voices telling them that they haven't been successful before. And so at this point, when you're getting close to graduation, whether it's with your high school equivalency or completing a training program, that, you know, are you better than me or better than other people in the family? And so all of a sudden, they're back in the cycle of, I can't be better than my family. I can't be better than my friends. And so the stopping out happens, or life happens. And so it's trying to help our students from the beginning put plans in place and let them know that these things may happen, and these pushes and pulls are going to happen unless you start to think a little differently, because you are making changes and those changes are going to have a ripple effect. And so how you respond is going to look different and it's going to sound different. And so those changes are hard, and we see students act differently, and you're going to talk about behaviors later. And we think of behaviors as a child issue, but behaviors are also as an adult issue.
Sure, yeah. Well, and from the outside, and you know, I can't know what any of that person, what their life is like, right, or what those pressures are like. I mean, we could talk about it, but I don't know what it feels like. Mm-hmm. But from the outside, you can't help but think, what a tremendous shame. You know, somebody took the step and trouble and created the training time for the training opportunity or the adult education, high school equivalency, does all the work, then gets there and finds some reason outside push to, sap them of that motivation.
We have more students not show up to take the test for the high school equivalency than I would ever want to tell you, because they've gotten there, they've prepared, they're ready to go. They're, quite honestly, we don't send students that are in our program until we are really sure that they're ready to go, and they don't show up for the test.
Yeah, as I said, you know, in this larger conversation about how does education help someone out of poverty, again, whether it's the third grader, the 10th grader, or the adult, nothing could be a bigger shame than that. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's willing to do it doesn't have the motivation problems until they're sort of beaten down. Wow. Well, this is City Limits Talk. Thanks for joining us. Glad you're listening. We're going to be talking right up until 4 o'clock today about how poverty is impacting education. We've been talking about the impact it has on higher education and the ability for someone to get ahead. Coming up, we'll get into our elementary and high schools to see how poverty's impact shapes how they have to approach day-to-day operations in a school. Remember, you can share your thoughts on the City Limits WAER Facebook page, or on Twitter at WAER883, and you can use the hashtag CityLimitsTalk. Welcome back to City Limits Talk here on WAER. I'm Chris Bolt. We're discussing how poverty impacts education, and now want to look into our elementary and high schools. This City Limit Talk panel on poverty and education is part of our year-long City Limits project. There's much more to listen to on demand and on podcasts at citylimitsproject.org. Well, we've been talking about kind of the higher education or post-secondary, kind of the path from someone who wants to take that step from wherever their life is to a more stable future. But let's back up just a little bit and talk about how poverty is impacting elementary schools, say the K-12 schools. One piece of research we found looking into this panel was that 40% of students are not prepared for primary school. Needless to say, much of that is related to resources and not being there because of somebody's living situation, et cetera. What does that mean when, you know, your kids are coming? You know, we're talking to Dr. Hayali from the charter schools and Eli Hernandez from the Syracuse City Schools. What does that mean when those kids are coming to school in kindergarten, first grade, elementary school, that the school just doesn't really have kids who are ready to get that basic education to get them moving on as they move up?
So, first of all, this is my 25th almost year in education. So far, I never have found any miracle or magic in education. Maybe someone found, but can pass it on me. But closing the gap, it takes time. It takes dedication, energy, a lot of intrinsic motivation that comes through the teachers that will go that step. And when we start with the teachers, which is the only one who is the only one who has the greatest effect, learning effect on the students, we need to really train them well. It's a whole different story teaching in an urban environment, having that poverty in the mind and making sure understanding where all those, you know, cries from the children are coming from, and respecting and understanding and relating. Before we teach, we need to reach them. That's really crucial. So having all those opportunities or not opportunities for the children creates this lack of exposure, which is one of the main fundamental for the motivation. So you already are coming with a gap. You're trying to close the gap. And with an egregorian system, which is only in 180 days, you know, and five those, it seems to me, I mean, for years we've been trying to do it with different curriculum, with different approaches and this and that. But it seems to be like Einstein said, it's like insanity to expect
the same thing over and over.
Yeah, and expect a different result. Am I right? So then it comes to our the concern is, what do we do with the summertime? We can't. They can't afford summer camps. They can't. So where are we with this? Is there any funding? Obviously, there is no funding on that side. But those are the questions that need to be really discussed on the table courageously, you know, and honestly, and we need to really tackle that part in order to close the gap, because there is a gap, and unfortunately, we all know there's a disparity of funding. Big time. It's research based and everywhere else. And again, expecting the same result. Imagine this child who just came from Senegal or Sudan or somewhere, Myanmar, and has no idea. Yes and no, maybe, you know, and we are trying to make sure within 3, 4, or 5 years, you know, closing the gap and hopefully preparing as a good, productive citizen within the community. That will take a lot of energy and a lot of resources. So let's don't assume any miracle, magic. Maybe there is, like I said, but it requires the whole society, the whole community to work together. And therefore, I really want to applaud again all the leaders, our Dr. Crable, our, you know, the community leaders. Like, I'm so thankful to 100 Black Men and all others who steps out there. Instead of spending, they could have spent their time with their families, but they're spending the time with the children and being a role model, which is really amazing.
Well, Principal Hernandez, you know, how is it different now for that K-1-2-3 teacher because the kids just really are not even ready to get what they need to give them so that they can reach the reading level at third grade or have any chance of 4, 5, 6 and then on in school?
So it's very difficult. The biggest struggle is that our children, as we're talking, are not coming even prepared to enter kindergarten. They don't know how to tie their shoes, just the basic things, okay? And it's not for lack that a parent doesn't want to help. Let's make sure that we're all clear on that. It's the fact that when you have a parent who's running around, who has 4 to 5 children, who's a single parent, several jobs, trying to make it, that's in the cycle that they're in, okay? So what happens when they come to us? We are, you know, in our school, we go from 8 to 2. I dare say we need more time. I agree. We need more than 180 days. We continue 180 days. You got those snow days. It doesn't help. Then we look into funding for summer school. Are you kidding me? Why should we have to fight for funding? It should be already be there. So there's different layers when we talk about poverty, right? We're going to talk about the federal government and their fair share and what they need to do. We'll talk about us, even the 100 Black Men and all these organizations that are so helping our schools. And we're still not there. So something needs to change. Again, we can't continue doing what we're doing, right? And I believe that, you know, for our teachers, it's double the work. We spend quality time on getting them to just feeding them. Okay, we have blessings in a backpack mm-hmm. where every Friday our kids leave with food for two breakfasts, two lunches, two dinners right. that they can help and mom can help them. And they need it. They appreciate it. We have, you know.
Let's just press that in just a little more because that's a reality mm-hmm. that I've told this story to people and they're flabbergasted. So my guess is a lot of the community doesn't know about the blessings in a backpack thing. Kids get. In our schools, all kids have breakfast and lunch available to them, right?
Correct.
In city schools. So the blessings in a backpack is acknowledging that Saturday and Sunday they don't have anything to eat.
That is correct, especially on weekends, long weekends. We know that our children are not having the adequate food. So one of the programs was Blessings in a Backpack. It started at Delaware. It's now expanded mm-hmm. to other several schools in our district. And It takes $100 to feed one of our children for the entire school year, every weekend. And so we continue to fundraise, which, to listen to what we're saying, we continue to fundraise something that I truly believe should already be in place, mm-hmm. right? And so to be able to meet the needs. Not all of my students at this time have it out of 577, mm-hmm. but the majority. And so these are some of the things that we need to continue to work on and change.
Which is not about learning math or learning to write or learning to read better or anything.
Oh, we were supposed
like
to
none
teach
of you,
them too, right?
Neither of you has talked about, you know, kind of the times tables. I don't know if we're still doing that, but any of that stuff.
So
that's the point, isn't it? Is that the mission has to deal with A before you can even consider B.
I was talking to one of my colleagues and she said to me, Eli, Maslow's hierarchy of need comes before we tackle Bloom's taxonomy, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh, I love it because it's exactly what we do. But I'm going to put it out there that it's not in every area. And we all know that. So then when we talk about poverty, mm-hmm. you're also looking at race as well. But that's another right. show.
I mean, to piggyback on what you said is a lot of times people say, well, there's so many food banks. Oh, there's so many food banks. There's so many resources out here. You shouldn't be struggling. And it goes back to the stress and trauma of poverty. I'm not going and walking down to the food bank if I know this gang is outside. And I think that is a constant reality for many of our youth. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that.
You know, on the ground level, what has it changed to be a teacher in these environments? You know, you study to be a teacher, you learn how to, you know, whether it's elementary education or if it's more specific to a discipline, like you're a math teacher at a high school, what have you. But needless to say, that's only a piece of their job anymore. You know, how has it changed on the ground to be a teacher now because of having to deal with the things we've been talking about?
So in our case, when we get those fresh students or college graduates right out of college and they had their theoretical part and some student teaching part as well under their belt, it is a whole different experience because, like I said before you teach, we need to reach our children. And in order to reach our children, it's not just in the classroom, also the family. So when we do home visits, it's not about, you know, how the child did not act right or this and that. But it's about what's your hopes and dreams about your child. And when you do this home visit, it's very important that Mrs. Jackson on the other side, when opens the doors, will feel. Mrs. Jackson might not be a college grad, might not be even a high school grad, but Mrs. Jackson understands very well your body language. Do you really mean it? Or are you here because Dr. Hayali asked you to do it? All right. So therefore, it's really important for those teachers when they're coming in to give them the real proper training and understand that and understand the mission, because the only thing we can tap into it, it's not about the salary. It's mm-hmm. not about, you know, all those benefits and everything. It's about the intrinsic motivation they have. But they have to feel it. It's you know, and you share those stories. The story is like the starfishes on the beach. You know, you all know this. Yes, when the child tried to rescue the one starfish, because it sometimes makes you so you know, create such a discouragement that having so many starfish on the beach, I can't rescue them all. But it starts with that one. Keep that one in your mind. And all of our children, with that one creates another two. That creates a whole chain reaction which can change the whole environment. So, and having that mindset with that poverty, you know, it's a whole different. So understanding the needs and referring to the right places, mm-hmm. it's really important. Sometimes we just assume that you're talking so loud. What's the reason behind it? Mm-hmm. Or why are you sleeping? Where's our nurse here? Where's the school counselor's place? So, like I said, the whole village has a big impact on this child.
Right.
And training this teacher, and I love it when they're coming so fresh, they want to really change the world, yes? And you want to keep that going on.
Right.
You want to have that. You don't want to lose it. So, but training and PD is in the real life. And when they see at the end of the year, there are many tears also on the way. It's not just all funny, laughing, and everything else. But when they started to see those children are changing and the parents are coming and thanking them, of the fact that because of your home visit, because of your, you know, extra mile, I believe in you now. I believe in you. And we know Johnny is going to play the game. Johnny's always going to pick the sides and blame or share the fact that we don't have homeworks. We don't have this. Teachers didn't pick on. No, we are not picking on it. We are pushing your child to make the best out of it. And as long as Ms. Jackson believes and trusts you, the fact that you are there with that support, it's going to make a difference.
You touched when you said, you know, doing a residential visit. One of the things that we came across, and I actually spent a little bit of time in the schools for a project I'm working on for the citylimits.project.org website, about how often housing and residential instability is an issue that gets in a lot of the way of students. There was research that we found from the Urban Institute that if somebody has moved three or more times for negative reasons in their school career, they're 15% less likely to complete high school, 36% less likely to enroll in college, and 68% less likely to complete college. And what I heard sitting in social work offices for a couple of hours, a couple different days, is almost everybody had this residential instability thing that, you know, now the school has to figure this out. Where are they going to be bused from? Are they going to have to change schools, et cetera? Needless to say, it's not your problem, but it is your problem.
It is.
Absolutely. It's our problem. And again, it goes back to the, you know, teaching the whole child. The minute they leave their house, they become our responsibility. The minute they leave our school until they get home. And then after that, who's responsible?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, we really are, right? It takes our whole entire community. When you talk about, you know, we're not even talking about McKinney-Vento, right? We're talking about, yes. Not even talking about the kids who are homeless,
mm-hmm.
right? The amount of children just in one grade level, 22 students in one grade level, that's a class, a classroom of students that are homeless. And we're going to attempt to teach them how to count and read? It's not happening. And we need to do, you know, so when we look at it, what are we doing in our housing?
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing in our food industry? You talked about, you know, having food, but do you know that for 20 years there were no supermarkets in the Southwest corridor? Right?
Right.
So these children, these parents are walking, mm-hmm. or they're going to the grocery stores where we know it's not.
There's no groceries.
There's no groceries,
yeah,
right? It's just junk food.
Prepared food.
So,
yeah.
it's just so many things that continue that we need to try to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the general community gets that that's the challenge of schools or of education at all level? I mean, we're kind of running out of time this hour, so maybe we'll bring that question up as we get to the next hour. But thanks. I mean, it's so valuable to kind of hear what these realities are and how, you know, they are affecting the job of education. This is City Limits Talk. We're discussing how Syracuse's high rates of poverty are affecting education in our community at all levels. The conversation continues next hour. What opportunities exist in the community to boost basic skills such as literacy? And what are the psychological and mental health aspects of poverty that must be conquered for education to work? Some of the things we're going to start discussing next hour as the City Limits Talk conversation goes on. This is a special presentation of WAER's year-long investigation of poverty in Syracuse. The special audio journalism project is at citylimitsproject.org. This is 88.3 WAER Syracuse.
City Limits is funded in part by the Central New York Community Foundation. Established in 1927, the Central New York Community Foundation encourages local philanthropy by supporting the growth of permanent charitable endowments for the betterment of the region. More information at cnycf.org. Support for City Limits also comes from Grossman St. Amour Certified Public Accountants, PLLC, located in downtown Syracuse at 110 West Fayette Street. Find out more at gsacpas.com. And by National Grid, with a local office in Syracuse at 300 Erie Boulevard West. Find out more by visiting nationalgridus.com.
This is City Limits Talk. Today, Chris Bolt is leading a discussion on poverty's impact on education. That conversation continues after the news.